Support for this program provided by Girdwood, Alaska. Take a drive down the scenic highway past Beluga Point. Hike Bird Ridge and enjoy what Girdwood has to offer. Exploring your home state is the COVID-safe way to enjoy the summer.
Welcome to Native America Calling. From Albuquerque, I'm Antonia Gonzalez. It's been a long year for Native businesses that rely on tourism, and just when it looked like things were starting to return to somewhat normal, concerns over new strains of the COVID-19 virus are focusing renewed precautions. But there are some encouraging signs of a rebound. Tribal casinos, resorts, cultural centers, and recreation destinations are seeing business as the public hits the roads. We'll hear more about it right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Tripp Krause, in for Antonia Gonzalez. The Canadian government has reached an agreement in principle with the First Nations to settle two class action lawsuits over drinking water advisories. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, more than 140,000 people could be compensated if the court approves the settlement.
The proposed agreement is worth nearly $8 billion. $1.5 billion would be direct compensation to people who have not had access to clean drinking water. There would also be money for the creation of a $400 million First Nations Economic and Cultural Restoration Fund. Two First Nations launched the class action lawsuits against Ottawa over the lack of safe drinking water in their communities. Mark Miller is Canada's Indigenous Services Minister.
As well as a forward commitment to support reliable access to safe drinking water on reserve, with $6 billion in targeted supports, including capital and operations and maintenance. And finally, the modernization of Canada's First Nations drinking water legislation.
The Canadian government of Prime Minister Justin Trudeau had pledged in 2015 to lift all drinking water advisories in First Nations communities by March of this year. 108 advisories have been lifted, 51 remain in effect, most of them in Ontario. Miller says the agreement in principle brings the parties a step closer to reconciling a long history, and it can be celebrated as a step in the right direction toward achieving the goal of clean water for all. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Cherokee Nation Health Services will suspend elective surgeries temporarily and reactivate its COVID-19 surge plan for W.W. Hastings Hospital. Cherokee Nation announced the decision in a news release saying that a rise of COVID patients prompted the change. According to the release, 90% of new cases were among unvaccinated patients, and in the last week of July, about 600 new cases were reported in the tribal health system. The U.S. Interior and Justice Departments recently announced how they're moving forward with the Not Invisible Act, which passed last fall to better address the missing and murdered Indigenous persons crisis. Yellowstone Public Radio's Taylor Stagner has more.
Nominations are open for a new joint committee to nationally address violent crimes committed against Indigenous people. The Not Invisible Act was passed last year in an effort to better government interconnectivity and communication to better serve Indigenous citizens. Interior Secretary Deb Haaland spoke last fall in front of Congress about the importance of the Not Invisible Act, which passed unanimously.
It will also create a point person within the Bureau of Indian Affairs charged with improving coordination of violent crime prevention efforts across federal agencies.
Aiming for a commission of 28 members, the group will take testimony, hold hearings, and formulate recommendations to better equip the federal government to combat violent crimes in Indian country. For National Native News, I'm Taylor Stagner.
The Native American Heritage Fund will distribute more than $480,000 in funds to improve relationships between the public and Native populations in Michigan. As part of that funding, 11 school districts and colleges across Michigan will rebrand racially insensitive mascots and improve school curriculum related to the 12 federally recognized Native American tribes located in what is now the state. In 2015, massive wildfires burned more than 240,000 acres on the Colville Reservation. Now the Confederated Tribes of the Colville Reservation will sue the United States, saying that the federal government failed to maintain forest health through actions like prescribed burning, which led to the fire's size and intensity. According to a news release from the Colville Tribes, the lawsuit seeks damages in the loss of more than 590 square miles of commercial timber. The release goes on to say that the tribes also allege that the U.S. prioritized off-reservation non-trust property over the tribes' trust forests. For National Native News, I'm Trip Krause.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by AARP. The Native Urban Elder Needs Assessment Survey will provide data to improve urban Indian elder health equity. Elders are underrepresented in data, and you can help. Info and survey at uiacoalition.org.
Support by the Sanosky Chambers Law Firm, championing tribal sovereignty and defending Native American rights since 1976, with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. It's still summer, but before it winds down and students start school, people are still hitting the roads, boarding flights, and planning late summer vacations. Many are looking forward to traveling after staying close to home due to COVID-19 restrictions. Tribal destinations have long been popular tourism places for gaming, recreation, cultural centers, art, businesses, and much more. Many in Indian country have felt the economic hit from the pandemic. Some reservations remain closed, but there are Native centers and communities welcoming tourists back. Many are taking precautions, hoping to help their economic recovery while sharing tribal way of life, language, and culture. Today, we're talking about tribal tourism, and we'd like to hear from you. Join the conversation by giving us a call at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And I'd like to introduce our guest for the hour to talk about this. Joining the show are Sherry Rupert, the CEO of the American Indian and Alaska Native Tourism Association, Emily Edenshaw, the CEO of the Alaska Native Heritage Center, and Stacy Half Moon, the Senior Director of the Choctaw Cultural Center. I want to welcome you all today to Native America Calling. And Sherry, let's go ahead and start off by just telling us a little bit about how tribes and the tourism industry in American Indian, Alaska Native communities, and Native Hawaiian communities were hit by the COVID-19 pandemic.
Yeah, so it's been a tough year for tribes and Native tourism enterprises, but we've also seen innovation, and among them, we learned of many tribes increasing their outdoor activities during the pandemic, which led us to introduce a new partnership with the Leave No Trace Center for Outdoor Ethics earlier this year. And then we've also seen small Native-owned businesses have to pivot. You know, when you're in a pandemic and you're in tourism, you have to kind of look at the way that you do things. And so one of these small Native-owned businesses up in Idaho changed from being a tour operator to opening an artisan shop where she, you know, purchased these items from her from other Native artists in the area to help them during the pandemic, and she's done very well.
And that sounds like really great innovation, especially during the time where we've seen a lot of economic hurt from tribal businesses, individual artists as well. And there's also folks in Indian country who also rely on tourism for food stands and other avenues where they generate income. And what are some of the things that you've heard from tribes, Sherry, that really, really, you know, that they needed during the pandemic?
Well, first of all, you know, when we talked to our membership, what they told us was it was really nice being able for us to communicate with them through our email distribution and through webinars, just to know that that we're out here and they're out there, and that we're providing them with the information that they need in regard to marketing and just information and technical assistance and training to help them as they re-emerge out of the pandemic.
And Stacy, the Choctaw Cultural Center is new, and how was it impacted by the pandemic?
It's great to be here today just to visit a little bit. It was interesting. You know, we were close to hitting completion on our construction when the pandemic first hit and everything essentially shut down. So there were several impacts from that on the progress of completion of the cultural center, on staffing and, the exhibitions. There were a lot of partnerships that we were undertaking with people that were out of state and couldn't travel into the state and things like that. So it definitely delayed our opening and delayed some of the hiring, delayed exhibition development, but we were able to finally hit completion on construction and have everything in place to open just this past July 23rd.
And that was exciting news for sure. And Emily, the same thing for the Alaska Native Heritage Center. What were some of the impacts of COVID-19?
Hi, good morning, Uva Lotuk. Thank you so much for having me here. And good morning to Sherry and Stacy. At the Heritage Center, we were heavily impacted. We had more than $1 million loss last year due to the impact on tourism here in Anchorage and Alaska. Like other Native nonprofits, we heavily rely on tourism dollars as its unrestricted funding. But as Sherry was speaking to it, it really did allow us to be innovative and think outside the Bentwood box, as we say here. We regrouped as a team here, and we held an intergenerational strategic planning process during the pandemic. And this was really grounded in the understanding that, we're all impacted, and so we all need to be part of the solution. And, what came out of that was really telling. And what I mean by that is, there was pieces of feedback from even our interns who have been part of our programming for 22 years. And they gave us feedback such as, we've always felt we've come second to tourists. And that intergenerational strategic planning process allowed us to hold a mirror up to ourselves and say, who are we really serving here at the Heritage Center? And I'm sharing this because, we have, since that meeting, we've really updated our programming. We've been offering more classes, not only for our interns, but for our community. And it really allowed us, like I said, to have these honest conversations about, as we work to come out of this pandemic, how are we going to be in better service to our community? And it really was that intergenerational strategic planning process that allowed us to have some honest conversations. And one of the other things I want to share with everyone is that we also use this as a time to link arms with other organizations and tribes across our state. A lot of what people don't know in Alaska, unlike other states, we don't really have, until recently, any sort of funding for cultural tourism. But thanks to work by Camille Ferguson and people like Mary Goddard and being able to reach out to Sherry and Stacy, we are reshaping what cultural tourism looks like in Alaska right now. And all of that work has, it's been going on, for decades, really. But I feel like it's really come together this last year or these last couple years during COVID. We were able to come together and as a community statewide and say, this is what we want for cultural tourism in our state. Let's go out and try to find funding for it, which we were successful in doing so. And so, again, speaking to what Sherry had mentioned, this was really an opportunity for us to come together and to help reshape an industry that, you know, in Alaska, the tourism industry is the second largest industry in Alaska. And so one thing we often say here is that we really want visitors, when they come to Alaska, to not only have a geographical experience, we want our visitors to have an Indigenous experience, because Alaska always has been and always will be a Native place. And so our tourism and our industry should reflect the place, our values, the people of these lands. And so I'm really proud to share that we've been successful these last couple years during COVID. And I really just want to lift up the many hands that are helping us advance this work, including the two incredible women who are on this call today. So thank you.
Thank you, Emily, for that. And those are some great points to, you know, to reflect. A lot of different industries, not just tourism, but other businesses, different industries, even tribes and tribal communities have really used this time to reflect and to connect with community and reaching out to others. And we hear that a lot, and how important tribal culture, tribal language, history is, and how all of these things have helped people across the country during these difficult times, during the pandemic, and just to connect with that. And then also to share through the tourism industry as well to non-Native folks. And Stacey, just reflecting on some of the things that Emily said, connecting to the community, the Native community, and then also looking out and branching with others. Go ahead, Stacey.
Yeah, thank you. Those were really great points. I appreciate that. You know, one of the things that was very interesting timing, and I want to, you know, give acknowledgement to IANTA, is during the period of COVID, I was able, and several other people from Choctaw Nation were able, to take the cultural heritage tourism course online and complete that certification. And so even having that extra time because of COVID, and to really actively think about how we do our work, I think the Choctaw Cultural Center and the leaders of the Cultural Center had done really fantastic groundwork already, reaching out to community, doing a lot of community interviews, community surveys, listening to the tribal council. They had really done a lot of that groundwork in a good, positive way. So we had great foundation for the Choctaw Cultural Center. But even thinking, you know, through different elements of cultural heritage tourism and the necessity to reach out to your community, not just the tribal community in Oklahoma, as you all probably know, there are a lot of partners in our community who may or may not be Native. So it really raised, I think, our awareness of how to partner, of what the audiences are looking for, which is authentic experiences.
For sure. Thank you for that. And we want to give out our number again. It's 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. We got to take a quick break, but we'll be right back.
Homelessness is an unfortunate reality for a disproportionate number of Native Americans. Some tribes and urban Native organizations are building homes with 600 square feet or less to help unsheltered relatives. We'll hear about those efforts and other innovations to provide shelter. That's on the next Native America Calling.
Support by Amerind, Indian Country's 100% tribally owned insurance partner. Amerind works with tribal governments and their business enterprises to provide effective commercial insurance coverage, strengthen Native American communities, protect tribal sovereignty, and help keep dollars in Indian Country. More information on property, liability, workers' compensation, and commercial auto solutions at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Today we're taking a look at tribal tourism. We're talking to some people involved in the tribal tourism industry. Maybe you have plans to travel this summer. Maybe you already took a trip to a Native destination. We want you to join the discussion. Give us a call. Our number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And I also want to welcome back our guests, Sherry Rupert, Emily Edenshaw, and Stacy Halfmoon. Welcome back to Native America Calling. And before the break, we were talking, Stacy, a little bit about, you know, connecting to the community and also learning with others. Sherry, why is that important for tribal tourism to be culturally based and also to listen to the community members?
Well, I believe that tourism is a community decision, right? Tourism is going to affect the entire community. So I think it's always good to go out and to find out what people's concerns are, if any, and you know, when tourism comes in, it if managed well, it can be a great way to bring in, you know, diverse revenue into the community, but also an opportunity to perpetuate the culture. You know, we teach others about who we are, but our children are watching and they're learning along the way as well.
And the interest in American Indian, Alaska Native, Native Hawaiian people, tribal nations, how is that when you talk about the tourism industry, when you go out to different places? What is the interest, Sherry?
Well, we've actually been out. We started traveling in June and going out into the communities and to different conferences and things like that. And so what we're hearing right now is that, you know, there's a huge interest in getting out, and many of our tribal communities are in rural areas, wide open spaces. And as you know, that's kind of where tourism is going right now, is domestic and those wide open spaces where there's not as many people. And, you know, you can be COVID safe outside.
And Emily, share maybe a little bit about how the Alaska Native Heritage Center has done some of that with COVID precautions.
Yeah, so we, as I shared last, you know, we came together during COVID, and we were really operating from a standpoint that if we are able to open safely, we are going to do it. When we were created more than 22 years ago, we were created with a vision of being a community and healing place. And what better place to be at than at a cultural center and a community center that sits on 26 acres, is 36,000 square feet. And, you know, I'm sure everyone can agree that, especially during a global pandemic, you know, we all need healing. And so we, as I shared, we said, you know, we are going to safely open. And so I'm really proud to share that we were able to host and run our internship program last year. We're doing it again this year. And, you know, coming into this year as businesses started opening, you know, there was so much anecdotal information that was available. We were trying to forecast, you know, what is it going to look like in terms of visitors to Alaska? You know, we were projecting about 25% visitor rate, but we're pushing close to 60% based off 2019 numbers. And so we've had a huge influx of independent visitors, as well as tour buses and just, you know, locals who are wanting to come by and to partner and to visit the Heritage Center. And I'll just end with, you know, in addition to finding creative ways to open up our facility to make our programming available to our community members, we also partnered with several entities that we may or may not have partnered with before. And I'll just quickly share two examples. You know, we've had a longstanding relationship and partnership with the Siri Foundation. And that's one example where we knew that if people can't come to the Heritage Center because of the pandemic to experience and to learn about our culture, we're going to bring our culture to them and our knowledge to them. And so it was really through that partnership where we started creating thousands and thousands of culture boxes and sent them nationwide. And that was you know, a great example of the power of partnership. And then the other example I want to share is, you know, working with our most vulnerable people who live on the street. I think oftentimes cultural centers and Native nonprofits, there's this Western perception of we're just here for tourists or we're just here for school visits, which, you know, that is true. But in addition to that, we not only serve our youth and our elders, but we also serve people who are on the streets and in shelters and in jails. And we decided to work with and partner with Alaska Art Alliance, which works with 20 Alaska Native men who struggle with homelessness and poverty. And we were able, again, to bring our mission to them versus them having to come to us. And so those are just a few examples of our programming that really came out of the pandemic. So thanks for that question.
Well, thanks for sharing that, Emily, and definitely want to hear about some more things going on there in Anchorage. Stacey, with the cultural center there being brand new, do you think, are you hearing or seeing from people that there's a tourism demand because people have been at home for months due to COVID-19 restrictions?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that you've hit the nail on the head. Everybody has been, especially, you know, in the Choctaw community, there's been a lot of buildup around and knowledge of that this cultural center was in the works. So we had really fantastic interest and turnouts and even online interest during our grand opening events. We had a series of opening events. And so, you know, doing all of this, trying to open anything new right now with COVID is certainly tricky. And I think we're watching to see, you know, what visitation numbers look like. We've only been open now 2 weeks. So we're still, you know, looking at all the numbers and seeing who's coming. But there is a lot of interest. And so that's really exciting. And we're happy to serve Choctaw community and people. And a lot of what was designed in the Cultural Center is to be a great resource and a value to Choctaw people. And at the same time, we want anyone who walks in those doors to feel like they had a fantastic, authentic experience and learned about the Choctaw people. So, yeah, we are anxious to see kind of how things play out as far as visitation this year and in light of everything kind of happening in the world right now.
And I want to remind our listeners that our phone lines are open. We want to hear from you. Give us a call. Our number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Or maybe you want to leave some comments on our social media page. Find us on Facebook at Native America Calling, or you can send us an email at comments@nativeamericacalling.com. We have three great guests joining us today talking about tribal tourism. Maybe you are part of the tribal tourism industry in your community. What has it been like? Maybe also there are some fears that in your community and the people are overcoming those fears and you know, what's going to be next for the tribal tourism industry? Give us a call. Our number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And Sherry, we've talked about adapting during COVID-19, even looking at resources and needs. And also, what is going on the federal level, especially in Congress, with helping the tribal tourism industry? Go ahead, Sherry.
Sure. There are some, of course, a lot of funding being given out, and most recently, two that I'll bring to mind. The first one is with the Office of Indian Economic Development, and they have a grant program out that will fund feasibility studies in cultural tourism. And then the EDA, of course, has six different pots of funding, and one of them is the indigenous pot of funding that tribes are available, that are available to tribes. And then there's also some competitive grants and, some competitive grants also that are available to tribes.
And from some of the members that you work with, what are some of the solutions they're looking at for economic recovery during this time?
Well, I think that they're looking forward to seeing
people visit, just as Stacy had mentioned. It's an exciting time for Native American tourism because there's so many experiences opening up through the U.S. This summer and later this year that were postponed because of COVID. Some of those, Stacy mentioned the Choctaw Cultural Center. There's also the First Americans Museum that's supposed to open in September. And it's a 175,000 square foot project that tells the story of the 39 tribes in Oklahoma. The Akwesasne Cultural Tours have launched, and they include the tour of the Mohawk Life. The guided tour program includes a visit to the museum accompanied by an Akwesasne cultural host and storyteller. They're also offering this in person, but they also offer several virtual experiences through Airbnb. The Oglala Lakota Living History Museum, that one, it's in the South Dakota Black Hills Badlands region, and this is also opening up here really soon. It will showcase the life of the Lakota people from the late 1800s up and through the 1960s. The MHA Center up in North Dakota, that one just recently opened with the Mandan Hidatsa Arikara Nation. And then Agua Caliente Cultural Plaza, that's supposed to open in early 2022. Down in Palm Springs with the Agua Caliente Band of Kiwea Indians. So we're seeing this large trend of tribes establishing their cultural centers and museums to tell their stories. And that's so important for us to be able to do. And these are just a handful of the ones that are coming online. So it's an exciting time.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that, Sherry. And also, Emily, what are some of the new exciting things happening there at the Alaska Native Heritage Center?
Oh, wow. That's, you know, at times like Sherry just mentioned, I feel like I'm drinking from a fire hose. There are just so many opportunities that are out there right now. You know, we have really... you know, even today, based off our intergenerational strategic planning process, we really are trying to partner with entities all across our state to bring the Heritage Center and our programming not only in Alaska but across our country. Not only are we, like I shared, we're open for the summer, but we're also really trying to bring our programming down to some of the most vulnerable areas in Anchorage. I'm really proud to share that we secured funding through a grant from Direct Relief, and we're able to create a women's only, Alaska Native women's only program that's really going to be meeting women where they're at down in downtown Anchorage, and it's really grounded in arts and culture. And this is modeled after our work with Alaska Art Alliance. And you know, one thing we say here at the Heritage Center is that everyone, no matter where you live, should have access to your culture and your knowledge. And so we really are trying to partner not only with funders but also with business owners like Leon Kinevac, who, again, we are really trying to bring our mission and our programming to people all across Alaska. I also want to share that through a cultural tourism lens, you know, we've been really successful at the state level. We've recently signed a strategic MOU with the Alaska Tourism Industry Association, and so this is really grounded in the mission and the vision to help reshape Alaska's tourism industry. And then I'll end with my last example. We were able to secure funding through the Ford Foundation. We were named one of America's cultural treasures. And so with that funding, we are really trying to update and to do a complete overhaul of our Hall of Cultures here in at the Heritage Center. And so we have a lot of exciting things going on, and I would just invite anyone who is on the phone or listening to please reach out to us. We want to hear from you if there are classes that you'd like us to host or if you have any ideas with our Hall of Cultures. You know, this is your Heritage Center. We are here for you. And, yeah, that's a great question, so thank you.
And Stacy, share some more about the new exciting things people can look forward to at the new center there in Oklahoma.
Yeah, happy to. We are just
so thrilled to be open. It's a beautiful facility. It sits on over 100 acres of Choctaw land near the tribal headquarters in Durant, Oklahoma. Our facility itself is just over 100,000 square feet. I might have said it's 100 acres that we're sitting on. Hopefully I didn't mix those up. But the facility itself is truly stunning. It sits on natural prairie land in southeastern Oklahoma, where Choctaw Nation covers approximately 11,000 square miles in southeastern Oklahoma. The cultural center itself has two exhibits. There's a permanent exhibition called Choctaw Miwat Aya, and that is the permanent exhibition, and that means the Choctaw journey. And so this is a truly beautiful, immersive exhibit that spans the origins of the Choctaw people and takes you through the history of the Choctaw through mound building cultures or periods and into the removal of the Choctaw people from their homeland to present day Oklahoma and that more recent history. We have a changing exhibition gallery right now featuring long ago stories of the Choctaw people. And again, very immersive. I think one of the things that's really special about our exhibits is that we were able to work with over 40 Choctaw artists and community members to have them help, craft all of the things, all of the cultural items you see in the exhibits on our live cast. Those were all made by Choctaw people today. And even the life casts were modeled after living Choctaw community members. So, you know, we really felt it was important to have that first person, that Choctaw narrative and perspective for our exhibits. We also have, I saw it was featured on your website, there's a picture of a giant turtle. That is the Look-See Activity Center. Look-See means turtle. In Choctaw, and that is another immersive learning environment for families and young people. We have so many more offerings that I can share with you.
Great. All right. We look forward to hearing that. There's a lot of excitement and a lot of things going on in tribal tourism. That's what we're talking about today here on Native America Calling. And we want to hear from you. Give us a call before the end of the hour, 1-800-996-2848. We got to take a quick break.
Smoking gave me COPD, which makes it harder and harder for me to breathe. I have a tip for you. If your doctor gives you 5 years to live, spend it talking with your grandchildren. Explain to him that your grandpa's not going to be around anymore to share his wisdom and his love. I haven't figured out how to do that yet. I'm running out of time.
COPD makes it harder and harder to breathe and can cause death. You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. We're putting the spotlight on tribal centers and tribal destinations today. Have you taken a trip lately to a Native destination? Maybe you work in the industry. We're taking a look at some of the impacts of the pandemic, but also talking about some exciting things happening right now. We'd like to hear from you. Our phone lines are open. We're at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And I'd also like to share that the American Indian and Alaska Native Tourism Association is a financial contributor to Native America Calling, our parent company, Quantic Broadcast Corporation. And I'd also like to welcome back our guests this hour, Sherry Rupert, Emily Edenshaw, and Stacy Half Moon. Thank you all so much. Welcome back. And before the break, Stacy, you were sharing some of the exciting things at the Choctaw Cultural Center. So just go ahead and continue where you left off.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I was mentioning the Look-See Activity Center and, again, another immersive environment, which was an important part of the cultural center and how it was developed. There's also a living village as part of the cultural center. So this is a really beautiful, vast outdoor space that includes a mound that pays homage to the Choctaw people and their mound building culture and history. So that's truly stunning. And in the living village, we have some traditional Choctaw winter homes. We have an heirloom garden. of course, the Cultural Center features a cafe. It's called Chompoli Cafe, and we have a really lovely mix of traditional comfort Choctaw foods. We hope to have seasonal foods that reflect kind of that heirloom garden and some of the more traditional corn, beans, and squash that are growing there. And we have classrooms. So we do offer classes, and the community can come into those classes for guests and community members, and then a theater. So those are just a few of the highlights of the Cultural Center, and we're very blessed to be catty corner to the amazing Choctaw Casino Resort. So, you know, that's an exciting part of, I think, when we talk about cultural heritage tourism and how you can package those visits and, you know, be a resource for all the people maybe coming there, but also for the community. So the being so close to the casino resort, which has numerous restaurants and three separate buildings with a lot of hotel accommodations. We are just very excited about this opportunity and to now be open and all the partnerships. We're like right there at the beginning, you know, of this journey. So I think all the staff at the Cultural Center and everyone who's there, our Historic Preservation Department, they do a lot of amazing work. We have a cultural events team at the Cultural Center. They do a lot of outreach and support. And so this is just truly opening the door, I think, for the Cultural Center, for the Choctaw Nation to really take a look at how we undertake the business of culture, right? How we're educating, how we're partnering, how we're teaching future generations. So we're just very excited to be on this journey and to finally be open.
Well, thank you for that, Stacey. Sounds like a great place to visit, and hopefully I'll be able to check it out someday in person myself. Sherry, I wanted to ask about attracting younger people to either the tribal tourism industry or even just to tribal tourism destinations. What is it? Is it usually like older generations, maybe families that I guess are interested in tribal tourism?
Yes. So in regard to the demographic that comes out for cultural heritage tourism, I think that it is, I wouldn't say the older, but certainly not teens. I mean, I guess if they come with their families. What we try to do to attract young people to the profession is to support them through scholarships. We have a scholarship program here at IANTA for those students that are entering into the tourism or hospitality field or a related field, and we give those out annually, and it's a $2,000 scholarship for each student. And then in regard to, you know, enticing a younger crowd out to our tribal attractions, we are looking, social media, I think, has been really important for that. And we're looking at some other platforms to include to do that.
And Emily, what about some of the things to attract younger generations? You talked a little bit about interns, but also attracting younger people to come to the Heritage Center.
Yeah, so we, you know, actually, let me back up. You know, we really can't tell the history of the Heritage Center without talking about our youth programming, and that rings so true today. You know, we are really, not only are we creating programs where they're primarily youth-led, but we're also trying to find ways to meet our community, not only virtually, but also like through culture boxes and through hosting events where they feel seen and they feel heard. And, you know, one thing that we often hear here at the Heritage Center is that, you know, there are a lot of people who feel disconnected from who they are as a Native person because they are either raised outside, whether it's their reservation or their community. And so Anchorage being the only cultural tourism facility and the only cultural center here in Anchorage, we receive or we welcome a lot of youth who come here who are really in search of their identity. And so we here at the Heritage Center, what we tell people is that, you know, you are native wherever you live. And, you know, the shame that a lot of our youth and even adults, I know for me, I carried a lot of that shame with me because I wasn't raised in my village. And, you know, when we work with our youth today, like I said, there is that kind of internal struggle of I am less than or I'm not a part of because of the fact that they live in an urban city or in an urban area. And we really are trying to tell our youth and to welcome them here and say, not only is this a safe place for you, but this is where you get to reconnect to not only your ancestors, to your knowledge, but you're able to feel seen and heard here at the Heritage Center. And, you know, we're also, in terms of programming, we are revitalizing our language program here. And that's something is that entire program is really being shaped and molded with the intent of figuring out how can we really work with our youth, knowing that they are the future of our, not only our community, but they're the next generation. And so, again, you know, more of our philosophy here at the Heritage Center, and this is something that, again, I think from a Western standpoint, there is this perception that Native nonprofits and cultural centers, we're only doing this or we're only doing that, and when in reality, we are meeting an unmet need across the board, whether if it's education, whether if it's, you know, helping our youth and adults reconnect to who they are as Native people, or, you know, meeting our community where they're at. Whether if it's in jails or in shelters and saying, you know, we love you and we're here and the Heritage Center welcomes you, wants to welcome you back home. And so those are just a few examples. But, you know, we really, like I said, you cannot tell the history of the Heritage Center without talking about our youth programming. And I'm so proud of our youth here, you know, and that's something that I'll just end with, you know, our interns here. I learned from them and being able to work in an environment where they're telling us what, you know, they would like. It really is that self-determination in action, and it's a beautiful thing to witness.
Well, thank you for that, Emily. Let's head over to the phone lines. Let's hear from Bertram on the Hopi Reservation listening to us on KUYI. Hello.
Yes, Lilima, good morning. Out here on our Hopi Reservation, we actually do not have an actual tourism department. So us as individual tour guides, you know, yes, we are entrepreneurs, and definitely we do share and educate to the visitors of who we are as the Hopi people. We do have a cultural center area where there is a museum there located at, but it is never manned or opened up for the visitors to see and get educated. So, you know, again, I'm a one-man operation of the Company of Ancient Pathways Tours. So I also not just conduct on the Hopi Reservation of seeing, you know, the sites, canyons, petroglyphs, Hopi villages, but I do also concentrate around other ancestral sites that are found throughout the Southwest regions in the Four Corner states as well. So just utilizing the tribal website as listing a portion of the guides on there. We do receive our site visitation permits through the Hopi Cultural Preservation Department and other tour sites, you know, that I had my information posted on would be like Frommer's. TripAdvisor is very good of allowing people to leave and previous clients to leave their reviews and ratings there. So a lot of the visitors definitely do a lot of their research online as well.
Well, thank you so much for calling in from KUYI or KUYI there in Hopi Land. Thank you. Let's go to one more caller, Lucille calling from New Mexico, listening to us on KUNM. Hello.
Hi. I just wanted to see if you could connect with the local transportation. There's not much here in northern New Mexico, but I've taken many people around to the various tribal sites, and I think it would be important, and also close to Albuquerque, the train that exists between Albuquerque and Santa Fe. So that's one, I think, that's for people who aren't driving. That's important.
Thank you so much. Definitely transportation, especially in rural areas, is important, where a lot of tribes are you need some sort of transportation to get out to their community. Thank you for calling in today. And as we head into the end of the hour, just want to, Sherry, let you have some thoughts about the future of tribal tourism, your hopes.
Thank you. And thanks for having me today. Our hope for tribal tourism is that that we come back. Prior to the pandemic hitting in 2020, the 2019 figures were way up for Indian country tourism. And so we're hoping to get back to that safely. And, I always want to give some tips for a good visitation to our communities, and that is to remember that we have more than 570 federally recognized sovereign nations across the country. And so don't expect to visit one nation and have it be similar to a visit to another tribe. We're all very unique, with unique histories, culture, heritage, and traditions. And then the second is just to treat a visit to native lands with respect. Don't enter places where you haven't been invited. And when in doubt about local customs, ask questions. I think we as Native people are always happy to answer questions about our culture. So thank you again.
Thank you. Thanks so much for joining us today. And Stacy, your final thought.
Well, just so appreciative of this opportunity to visit with both Sherry and Emily and you, and hearing all of the amazing things that are happening despite these trying times. We at the Choctaw Cultural Center, we truly want to be of value to our community and to the broader community, to anybody coming in. So we're going to continue to strive to do that now that our doors are open. And I think it's a lot about staying agile and flexible in these times, and always having a backup plan. If that's anything we've learned from COVID, is, being able to quickly switch to distance learning or online when necessary, and other ways to stay connected to not only Choctaw community, but to our audience, those who are interested in the Choctaw Cultural Center. So we hope everyone can come to Oklahoma and visit. As you heard, there are so many other tribal cultural centers and tribal nations in Oklahoma, and it's just an honor to be a part of this call today. Thank you for including us. Thank you.
Thank you. And Emily, your final thought.
So I would say that my hope for cultural tourism in Alaska is, from a community standpoint, just really seeing fostering healing throughout the Alaska Native community. Here at the Heritage Center, we recently hosted our first boarding school healing event. And, I am hopeful that cultural centers across the state, we can continue to link arms and to not only tell our beautiful, rich history, but also finding opportunities to tell the history that has been either left out or erased by, mainstream society. So I would say healing. I would also say, from an industry standpoint, there is really no excuse for tourism operators, for, the National Park Service or other agencies to not partner with tribes and Native nonprofits. We're here. We've always been here. And not only is it the right thing to do, but it's good for business. There's so much research out there that shows that when people experience cultural tourism, they stay longer and they spend more money. And so I would just say, again, healing and making sure that we're working in partnership. And then finally, from an education standpoint, my hope for cultural tourism is, again, finding those opportunities to tell our history and to make sure that it's our people telling that history. And so thank you again for having me. And again, I would just invite anyone, if you're listening to the call, to please reach out to the Alaska Native Heritage Center. And thank you so much to Stacy and to Sherry.
Thank you. And thank you to our guests and also to those who called in today. That's going to do it for us this week here at Native America Calling. Tune in next week for another lineup of discussions about Native topics. Our executive producer is Art Hughes. Our associate producer is Andy Murphy. Sol Treviso helped out this week. Marino Spencer is our engineer. Nola Davis Moses and Bob Peterson with Native Voice One. Clifton Chadwick, Trip Krause helped out with NNN this week. Charles Sather is our Chief of Operations, and President and CEO of Quantic Broadcast Corporation is Jacqueline Slee. I'm your host, Antonia Gonzalez. Join us again next week.
Looking to get your high school diploma? Southwestern Indian Polytechnic Institute offers Native Americans ages 18 or older training and preparation courses for the high school equivalency diplomas in person and online beginning September 6th. This no-charge program includes testing fees and other resources will be available to help with supplies and living expenses. Space is limited. Application deadline is August 6th. More by calling 505-382-4287 or at sipi.edu who support this show.
Buju, Anishwa is it again, but Aje Gekinuma Guzing, Gegomaji ta came gishita siwan, Odabaji Bawigun, Bindigay be a gazod, Gunoje no kid in a shinabi akosi begamigung no wajjigikain the man, Mawadishiwain, healthcare.gov, Gema Ganoj, 1-800-318-2596, Gaundinagadeg, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Quantic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.